This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. In fact, it's only going to be an hour today. We're going to take you up to Mariners pregame, a four-game series set to begin today with the Baltimore Orioles. We'll keep an eye on the weather. It seems like it might be a little threatening out there, but Mariners on a nice little run here. They're 5-4 on the season, and just, Dave, finding ways to win, just showing how gutty they – we talked about this after, I think it was the opening game of the season where they were down to the Giants. I don't know, what was it, 5-0, 4-0? It was one of those – they seemed like they were in a hole. Marco wasn't pitching well, and you thought, all right, not their night, go get them tomorrow. And they found a way to win. And we talked about it after that game, that they were going to develop a mindset through a game like that that says it really doesn't matter what the situation is. We've got a chance. And boy, did we see that yesterday with them trailing 6-0 heading into the, what was it, the sixth, seventh inning.
Yeah, that was so entertaining, man. I was just sitting on the edge of my bed the whole time. You know, once we got into like the sixth inning, it was just, it was so exciting. And, you know, it's funny, Mike Lefko, our producer, asked what was the best part of it. Was it, you know, Kyle Seager? Was it Kikuchi? Was it Trammell? You know, is it their grittiness? And that's it for me. For a young team to be able to make a comeback like that was just awesome to see. So there was plenty of drama yesterday. I was trying to get my wife into it. I couldn't get her into it because she was distracted. I was like, come on, look, there's going to be a fight here. The guy just beamed that guy. And then, you know, this guy said something to that guy. And then the skipper gets tossed. And, I mean, there was all kinds of good stuff going on. And then the comeback, the come from behind win and winning that series. I mean, a lot of people have them finishing second in American League Central. So it was a pretty good team that they beat.
Yeah, it's a very good – that offense is just ridiculous. I mean, Nelson Cruz, Byron Buxton, those guys are absolutely on a tear. That's one of the better lineups that Mariner pitching is going to face. I mean, the White Sox, they've had a tough schedule out of the gate. It's not been a bunch of cupcakes that they faced off against. So, you know, you take it for what it's worth. We'll see what they ultimately end up becoming. But what we've seen very early is that – there isn't, and it sounds so cliche, there's no quitting this team, but I think there's kind of this, another cliche, chip on their shoulder. I think they've heard from people like me and others saying, you know what, it's not about wins and losses this year. It's more about the, you know, the process and watching these guys take the next step. And they're probably, if they get to 500, that'll be great. I'm not the only one saying that. And I think they hear it. And I think that we've talked to them and it feels like there's a sense of purpose, like, really? You think we're going to do that? Let's prove everybody wrong. And they did it again yesterday in a game where you thought, all right, not their day. Go get them tomorrow against Baltimore, and they'll, you know, start anew, if you will. And they find a way to pull it out of the fire when the starting pitching has not been great the first time through the rotation. Kikuchi's had a couple of nice starts. Flexen had one good one. He was terrible yesterday. Marco has not been good. Obviously, we know what happened with Paxton. Dunn walks 8. They have found ways around some spotty, at best, starting pitching. And by the way, let's give the bullpen some credit. They were fantastic yesterday. Oh, man. They were great the night before. The bullpen has been very, very solid.
Yeah, I'm loving Rafael Montero. I mean, he's been really good. I'll throw in a third cliche, Bob. Nobody told these kids they can't win baseball games. it's just the way they're getting it done. But yeah, that was just such an entertaining game yesterday. And
were you hoping for a fight?
Yeah, I was. Because, you know, and they were talking on the broadcast about – actually, I filmed and sent to Danny and Jess. I should have sent it to you guys. But when Ty France is getting up off the ground, he after that first brushback, or was it maybe even after he got hit? But, I mean, the guy, Stashek, throws him 3 strikes. 2 of them are up in his kitchen, and 1 hits him. And, you know, the first one looked even worse. But – He mouthed something when he was looking at the pitcher. I was trying to figure out what it was. I don't know if you guys saw that.
But yeah, I was trying to put my lip reading skills into action, and they weren't firing for me.
Well, I'll tell you during the break what I thought it was, because can't say it on air. But yeah, it was you know. And then the whole thing with and then Will Vest comes back. Is that Will Vest that hit somebody with
an 85 mile an hour changeup? It was Buxton, right, that he hit.
Yeah. Buxton. And it's funny, the two guys involved in it are standing there because Ty France at the time was playing first base. And Buxton, and they're kind of chatting back and forth, like, "Yeah, how'd that feel when you got hit?" Well, that was a changeup. So, but yeah, it was kind of ridiculous.
It was lame.
Well, and not only that, I think, Bob, I said I like complaining about calls, you know, balls and strikes. I think we found the worst umpire in Major League. Was it Rodriguez? Was that his name? I can't remember his last name, but he was terrible. He was wildly inconsistent. And earlier on, Shoemaker just got in his face over, you know, I think it was a missed call against, I don't know if it was Marmolejos, but it changed the entire at bat. Ended up getting Marmolejos. He hit that weird double, which, where in the world's the yellow line? I have no idea why there wasn't some clear indicator. That was kind of weird the way that ball bounced back. But he gets a double, and then Trammell comes in and gets the 3-run home run. And that's, I think, when Shoemaker lost it on.
Yeah,
on
after he umpire. Hung the breaking ball, he hung it fat over the plate, and then he wants to go yell at the ump about that.
Yeah,
which I thought
he was talking about something that was like 10 pitches ago.
Yeah, if you got a problem at the time, then say it at the time. Don't wait until you screw up and then go whine to the umpire, which I believe he had a gripe. But to do it at that time took away some of the credibility. It's like, oh, well, I wouldn't have given up this home run if that did. It just was dumb. It was dumb. I thought the warning was pathetic. That was so stupid. They were down by one.
Yeah.
He threw a changeup. You think they're going to hit a guy, put the tying run on first base when they're down by one run, talking about the Twins, they're going to put the tying run on first base just for redemption right there, just for revenge right there. What kind of – they're not going to, A, hit him with a changeup, B, they're not going to put the tying run on first base in a game like that just to say, all right, now we're even. That was so stupid. Service comes out. He who knows what he said. The mask is on, hard to read his lips, but he gets tossed. So it was just – that was so dumb. I think the umps, and they were saying it on the broadcast, you have to take the game situation in mind before you throw out those warnings and understand that it wasn't a 10-2 game where they've got nothing to lose, so they're going to start plunking guys. That's the game tying run he's putting on first base right there.
Right.
And he threw a changeup.
Yeah, you throw the heater. You throw the heater if you want some retribution. So yeah, that part was that was ridiculous.
And by the way, as a texter just pointed out, Buxton's one of the fastest players in the game. So this is a guy who's, you know, he could score from first on a you know, ball in the gap, or maybe he's going to start stealing. But I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. You put speed on first base, which represents the game tying run, and you're going to warn the Mariners as if that was intentional with a mm-hmm. a change. It was such a blind spot. It was such a dumb moment.
Yeah. Well, and I think we found the guy. I'll look him up during the break. I think it's Gonzalez was his last name. But it was great for me. Plenty of drama for me. I love complaining about it. And you called that a ball, you know, two innings ago and all that good stuff. But then, you know, just the whole thing, Kyle with two home runs. Just doing a great job. Haniger, I mean, it's, and then Trammell gets in. That was a beautiful home run. At one point over the weekend, I think after he got his first home run, was that Saturday when he got his first home run?
Yeah, because he goes back to back games.
Yeah, he went deep both games. But there was a shot of something in the dugout. And he was leaning against the railing, looking out onto the field. And you could just tell it was kind of a moment where he's just kind of looking off into the distance, and he gets this big smile on his face. And I'm thinking, this kid, we love him. But, I mean, he's sitting there thinking, man, I just hit my first home run in the majors. And you just see the moment of reflection. So, but, yeah, it's a lot about that. But also I think we're seeing, you know, the veterans come around like Kyle Seager and Mitch Haniger and really kind of guide this team to these kind of comeback wins. But, I mean, this isn't the kind of win that you would think would be from a really, really young team. This is a very young team, and there's been just a lot of grittiness. So I love it. Roll out all the cliches you want.
Yeah, they seem to be living up to those cliches. There's no quitting this team and all that good stuff. And I know Riz likes to say that, and people will get bunched up about it. But it really does apply in this very early setting for the team. And speaking of Trammell, yeah, that first home run, he kept it together until he was rounding third, and then the smile broke out. He had a huge smile rounding third base. In fact, he retweeted it. I thought it was hilarious, the video. And then yesterday, for him to hit the three-run bomb. I think we've got that cut number one. Here's what that sounded like.
Here's the pitch. Swing, and this is a rocket. Absolutely torched. Tattooed to right field. Out by the welcome to Target Field sign. Taylor Trammell is enjoying his stay in the Twin Cities. Home runs in back-to-back games for the rookie. 6-4 Minnesota. Taylor Trammell, have yourself a weekend.
Like a, it's a rocket. It was torched.
Torched.
It was tattooed.
Tattooed. That's so, it's pretty scary how much we think alike, because I was just writing down rocket, torched, tattooed. Fantastic call by Goldsmith. I love it. I love it. But, yeah, that was you know, let me ask you this. I noticed this, and I don't know if maybe I'm late to noticing this, but they now have a graphic for how many ballparks that would have been a home run in.
Yeah.
And I think the one of them was like 21 of 30. Do you like that? Because, you know, I saw Nelson Cruz hit one up into those little flower pots they have going around the fence there. And that was a home run. This one, that the first one that Marmolejo's hit, I thought was one of those. But it hit into an area where there was no clear designation. But I have to say, and remember, what was it called? Boot Hill in Houston? Lefko would know this.
Oh, with the rant where it went up in center
field? Was like, it went up. And plus, wasn't there like a big pole
Talls
there or
Hill.
Something like that?
What was it like called? T-A-L, Talls Hill Talls or the Hill. Mound? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I called it Boot Hill. I think that's some Western thing.
You're referencing some old cowboy flick.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I love that. And I remember, I can't remember who the center fielder for the Mariners was, but he made a catch and he ran back, and then all of a sudden that hill kind of caught him, and then he fell down and he makes the catch. But I don't know. I like that it's not uniform. I really love that about ballparks around the league. And I thought that was a cool stat that, I don't know, again, how long they've had that. But, you know, when it says how many of, you know, at 412 feet, it would have been out of, you know, every stadium except this. That part of it's very, very cool part of baseball, I think.
Well, and I like it, too. I'm with you, because it accentuates what makes baseball unique. You score a touchdown in the NFL, every field is 100 yards. Every football field is exactly the same. You hit a three-pointer in basketball, it's the same distance around the arc of the key there. It's everything's the same. Free throw distance, it's the same court. So that's what makes baseball unique, is there isn't uniform except for the bases, right? In the pitching mound and the distance to home plate and things like that. But everything outside of that is different in each stadium. And to me, I love that. I think that's really cool. You got the Green Monster and Fenway, and you've got, you know, a short porch here, and then you've got other fields you look at and go, man, it's going to take a cannon shot to get it out of, you know, Chavez Ravine or Comerica Park or some of these other places that are looked at as pitcher's parks. And it's just, it's interesting to have hitter's parks, pitcher's parks, different dynamics, different structures, different designs. It to me, that's one of the coolest parts about baseball is separates itself, is it's not uniform other than what's happening in the infield, the distance between the bases and pitcher's mound to home plate.
Yeah, well, and like the Angels, they have something in their outfield that looks like something Disney would have.
All the rocks Disneyland. And water.
The rocks with the water. And
it's awesome.
Yeah, it was like a ride at Disneyland. But, yeah, all of that stuff is really cool. I just thought that was weird, though, the way it wasn't marked very clearly as far as, you know, for Marmolejo's, the double that he hit. But yeah, it was just really good stuff. I mean, it was exciting. There was some drama. You know, I thought, like I said, I thought there was going to be a fight. You know, and I started to really hate that Stashek guy. I mean, I was just looking at him going, what a punk. Look at the look on his face, man. What's wrong with you, man? You're throwing
the
Ty France?
End of the game, you wanted him dead.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that was all good stuff, man.
Well, and you know, I would love to see the Mariners get in a fight, because they just don't. They haven't been in a fight in what feels like decades. They just don't do it, even though they've had cause. There have been seasons where they were being plunked at a rate that was ridiculous. I remember, felt like every other time Zunino was up at the plate, he was getting hit, and they never really did anything. They never have done anything about it. I would love to see it, and I love seeing the service get fired up and you know, getting kicked out of the game. I'm not sure what he said, but I hope it was worth it. And it's good for the young guys to see that the manager's got your back in a situation like that, and be just the fire with a young group that doesn't Maybe they just haven't been in the game long enough to realize, yeah, we're not supposed to win this game. You know, there's 162. Often guys will be, all right, we'll get them tomorrow. And they just don't have that gene in them. And Lefko's got a stat here. 28 of their 41 runs that they've scored this season have been scored in the sixth inning or later. Now, you could say, well, that just represents a team that takes a while to get it going and they need to figure out how to start faster. And maybe there's some truth to that. But the fact that they've got that gene in them right now where they don't appear to have that give up of, all right, we'll get them tomorrow. It's only one of 162. No, we're going to find a way to pull it out of the fire despite what's going on with the lineup not hitting or our starting pitching isn't there. Whatever's not happening, they have found ways around it. At this point, through nine games, you're a winning team.
Yeah. Hey, was that Will Vest that plunked Buxton?
I was trying to remember who was on the hill at that point.
Yeah. But
it might have been.
Yeah, I think it was. But did you hear the story Sims told that he used to be neighbors with Will Vest? Scott Servais was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Servais, you know, when he was, I guess he was in Houston at the time, and he said he would always go over and throw baseballs back over the fence, and little Will Vest was back there hitting, I don't know if they were baseballs or wiffle balls or whatever. But, yeah. I mean, you know, I thought it was one thing when Servais was neighbors with Clayton.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, what do you think's more important? Which is a better thing to have, do you think, is that you had Will Vest as your neighbor or John Clayton?
Oh, boy, that's a close one, Dave. I mean, you could go either way, but I'm just going to give a slight edge to the Will Vest story. Just that's just a better story all the way around. But, I mean, living next to Clayton, you're really at the top of the real estate mountaintop there.
Well, when we bring this up, just because it's seemingly John Clayton is not only neighbors with everyone that we talk to, but also they went to his high school.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, I thought of that instantly. not because I think Servais is now Clayton's neighbor down there. So, but
yeah,
I thought that was a cool story.
Hey, one more from on Taylor Trammell, because it's cool to see him. He looks like he's starting to get comfortable up there. Had two hits yesterday. He was 2 for 5, drove in 3, still only hitting 185, which tells you how much he was scuffling up there at the plate. But it seems like it's a slow process. He's starting to find it. And this is a guy in cut number 2, Jerry DePoto, talking about. He went out there and took that job in left field.
The timeline for us was we anticipated an opening day outfield of Mitch Haniger in right, of Kyle Lewis in center field, and we were going in with an open mind about how we would address left field. And we remained open. We feel like Taylor Trammell just outright won the job. He had a terrific spring and did everything we could have asked him to do. And at just 23, we think there's a lot of upside in there. And while he's not batted for a high average in the first 9 games here, he has OPS right around 800 and is hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and he's taking his walks. And he's played a very good center field while we're waiting for Kyle Lewis to heal.
So hearing from some of the people around there, I don't know that they expected him to win that job as much as it was open. I don't know that that was the expectation, that he was going to win that job. And, you know, not that Jake Fraley is a superstar and it should have been his, but just a 23-year-old who's had really limited experience and then did what he did during spring and has earned it and is starting to show a bit of what you saw in spring. A guy who gets on base, a guy who's starting to find his timing up there at the plate. And, you know, again, if it doesn't amount to a high average, I can live with that. I'd just like to see a little less swing and miss from him. He's got a lot of strikeouts so far in 9 games. That's the one area I would point to and say, all right, if we can just figure out a way to get the ball, put the ball in play. If it results in an out, so be it. But just make some contact. Let's cut down on the swing and miss a bit.
Yeah, he leads the team in strikeouts with 16, but he's also second in walks. Trammell is, so, but you know, just a 185 average. So, yeah, I was trying to think of the names. So Fraley in left field so far. Did I see Demo out there? Dylan Moore, I think.
He plays everywhere. Marmolejos can play out there. And yeah.
But we've seen Haggerty, Fraley, Dylan Morris, Marmolejos, as you said, he can play there. And you see Ty France can play first. He can play third. So
yeah, Braden Bishop can play around. Yeah, you got guys who you can plug in at multiple spots out there.
Yeah, but Taylor Trammell just really awesome. I'm just loving seeing this kid, and you know he had some of the rookie jitters early on, the caught stealing, you know, where he just kind of wandered off the base and just started running while the pitcher still had the ball in his hand. But I love that. I love that he's just kind of learning as he goes. They're giving him space to do it, and that's the thing, you know, that's part of managing these young guys, because you want to bring them up, you don't want to ruin them and all that stuff, but also you want them to make mistakes and see how they recover from them.
Yep, exactly right. All right, let's take two.
Take two.
All right, are we back on Clowney watch? Jadeveon Clowney set to fly to Cleveland for a second visit with the Browns. Now, nothing on a timeline of when he might sign, but from Ian Rappaport, he says the two sides have maintained contact and they share mutual interest.
Boy, you know what, Dave? I give the Browns credit. They are devoted. Because they were after him last season, and they put an offer on the table by everybody's estimation was the best offer he received from any team out there by a long shot. He turned it down, and now he's going to have to sort of tuck tail and come back if he does sign with them, and I'm going to guess it's substantially less than he was offered last season. But they've had an interest in him for a long time. It feels almost inevitable at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back to him. I mean, it would have to be a huge deal as far as incentives go, you know, if I'm a team. We'll have to check this with Clayton when we do talk to him next, probably be Thursday. But I want to say it was like a three-year, $16 million deal.
Yeah, that was the word, that it was somewhere $15, $16 million a year as
and
an average.
And he turned it down. Yep. Yeah, he turned it down the first time through in Cleveland. So, yeah, you're right about tucking his tail. You know, I just don't think that guy's ever going to get sacks. I think he's a great football player. But I think at this point, he overestimates how much money he's worth. I think he's a problem for his agent, I would think, because I think he fired his agent, then rehired him. So he seems like one of those kind of guys, maybe a little bit unstable like Jaron Reed in that regard, where he lets his emotions get involved. But, yeah, I wouldn't be going back to him unless it was an entirely incentive-laden deal.
Well, former Bengals running back Giovanni Bernard just signed with the Bucs, and maybe another Tampa reunion. After a failed physical, the Patriots have released 34-year-old Julian Edelman.
Wow. Julian Edelman, man, that guy's dealt with a lot of injuries at 34. I'm not exactly sure what he's dealing with physically and where he's at physically, but you've got to imagine if there's something left in the tank, that Tom Brady would make a big push to bring him out there, wouldn't he? That's a nice security blanket for him if he can play, if he's still physically where he needs to be.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, Bob. Yeah, I'm sure that Brady's going to be campaigning for him down there. So what he's played, 12 years, it looks like. I mean, he's not a big guy. I mean, he's one of those little slot guys that can get open 34 years old, just 5'10", 198, built about like Doug Baldwin, maybe a little bit more, you know, muscled up. But yeah, he's a good player. But yeah, you're right, I bet you Brady's down there. Okay, there's another one, by the way. I see that's really quick, Bob, his in Pro Football Reference, his nickname's Minitron or Squirrel.
And the Patriots just absolutely cleaned up with those guys. It felt like they had three guys who were exactly the same, different levels of production, but Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, all smaller guys who are sort of quick, not necessarily burners, but just quick slot guys that they did really well with. And we'll see what he does at 34 years old if he's still got some game left in him. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknifeprostate is where you can check that out. I saw this. This was actually sent to me on Twitter last night, Dave, and I don't know if you've had a chance to check it out. It is gold. It is Mark Schlereth gets into a fight with an entire NFL fan base. We'll tell you more about it coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I had something sent to me on Twitter last night, Dave, that just was absolutely gold, absolute gold. And it was sent by the Guru Stu sent me this. And it's a video of Mark Schlereth, your good buddy, a friend of the program, absolutely taking out the Jets fan base. Now, I would advise anybody who's on Twitter to check out the video because the video is hilarious. The audio is very good, and we'll play that for you in just a sec. But you can, I retweeted it at Bob Stelton on Twitter. He's wearing a football helmet through this entire video and holding up his hand with three rings on it. And it's just his sense of humor is hilarious. We know that. But just an absolute takedown. Here's cut number three. Here's what Schlereth had to say to Jets fans who seemed to be upset with him.
So I thought I would share with you guys some Super Bowl rings and kind of the story of the championship games behind getting to these Super Bowls. So see if you can pick out the one where the Broncos beat the Jets, okay? No, it's not that one. You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle. That's Super Bowl 33, and that's when the Jets were up on us 10-0 in the third quarter, and then we came back and opened a can of whoop to the tune of 23-0 in the third and fourth quarter to beat you.
And Dave, I don't know if you've had a chance to look it up yet. It's probably about 2 minutes long or so, and he's wearing a football helmet the entire time, his Broncos helmet, talking about he wore it in, I don't know, one of the AFC title game and the Super Bowl, and he's wearing it through the whole video, and he's holding up three rings on his three middle fingers, so the pinky and the thumb are excluded, and he says, no, it's not this one, and he drops one finger down. That was this game against the Lions, and we did this, and it's not this one, and he takes his index finger, and that was this game against this, and all that's left standing is the one he said, you're right, Jets fans, it's this one. And it's a ring on his middle finger. It is so classic. It is such a beautiful takedown. And again, if you haven't seen the video, it's much longer than that audio, and it's priceless. You can check it out at Bob Stelton on Twitter. I retweeted it. It's just, oh, man, I love Schlereth. That was so good.
It's so clever. And it's just it's a great way of, you know, just the whole thing, the way he lays it out. That's how his mind works. He's unbelievable, man.
At first, you know, I'm watching it go, what is he doing? Why is he sitting there in a football helmet recording this video?
That just added to it. I mean, there was no good reason for that. It didn't have anything to do with the Jet fans or anything like that. It was just hilarious. He doesn't have his chin strap buckled. No chin strap there. But, oh, my gosh. So, quick story. I'll tell you. I showed you guys the shot of me getting kicked out of the game. And it's terrible. It looks really bad. It's way away from the ball, which I had no idea where the ball was. And then, you know, I went and kind of lunged it, and, you know, my elbow somehow hit Hostetler in the throat. And honestly, I do not, to this day, I swear to you, I'm 99% sure that Britt Hager is the one that hurt his throat, not me. Because he jumped on top of me and was calling, I'll never forget this, Hostetler was calling me sucker. You sucker, sucker, sucker. I was like, what? Why sucker? Anyway, so it was the whole thing was that, you know, I hit him in the throat. Well, I go into the training room the next day, and Mark Schlereth is in there. And you know how they have those little, it's like a 1-foot-tall skeleton?
Yeah.
You know, where they, in doctor's offices. Mm-hmm. He got a Raider helmet, one of those little tiny Raider helmets, and put it on the skeleton. And then he put a little piece of tape coming down from the face mask that covered the throat area. And he called it the Dave Wyman Larynx Protector. And so he made a huge joke out of it. And I was in such a bad mood. I'd gotten fined. I got everybody calling me a cheap shot. It was the only time I was ever famous in the NFL. You know, I'm on all the national shows and everything. And
yeah,
we
watched that the other day.
Yeah, I mean, I had three Hall of Famers call me a cheap shot. You know, and Mike Ditka said I taunted him, which was so stupid. I didn't taunt him.
Ditka's not sure what day it is. I wouldn't take that too seriously.
Yeah, but anyway, this is not about that. It's about Mark Schlereth. So, and, you know, I was in a really foul mood, and it was really bad. And when I went in there and saw that, and he was sitting there holding that, I could not help but laugh. I mean, I had to, because he's just so clever. I mean, and this, you've got to go and check this video out. Like Bob said, you know, of course, the helmet makes it funnier. I don't know why he put the helmet on.
No, he wears it the whole time.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got the three rings on his finger, and he saves, you know, the last one for the middle finger. And so here, Jets fans, and he's just putting it right into the camera. This is the second time where, you remember when he took on Baker Mayfield?
Yeah.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield came after him, and he never is like, hey, oh, well, I'm sorry. I remember him saying, this guy hasn't squirted one drop of pee in the NFL bucket yet.
Yeah.
And he just went after him, and then they backed off, you know, whatever it was, his agent. But he's not going to take anything off of anybody. It's hilarious.
No, and I'm just looking at it now. And what he wrote above the video is, it's come to my attention that I accidentally hurt the feelings of some Jets fans on the Pat McAfee show on Friday. I am nothing if not humble and gracious, so I made you this apology video. And then it's him in his Broncos helmet holding up his hand with three rings. And I just love how he goes, nope, you guessed it. It's this one, Jets fans. And it's his middle finger. And it's a little over 2 minutes long. It's funny because he acts like he's telling us these stories in earnest. Like, hey, let me tell you about this game. And yeah, we were down in this game. We came back and we beat them. And then we did this. And then he, you know, slowly brings down the other finger. And it's just, it's absolutely priceless. It's so, he's got such a great sense of humor. And unless you're a Jets fan, you probably don't find this funny.
But, no. I think we can get him. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you're not a Jets fan, it's impossible not to find it funny. I would love to see him or somebody with that sense of humor come up with one for the Astros fan base. I would love to see him insult them and have them get mad and see what he might say to them. Because that's the fan base I'd love to see him tear into.
You know what? I got to send this to Jessamyn McIntyre. McIntyre's a Jets fan. She grew up on Long Island.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was a Jets fan, so I'll have to send that to her. But it's so funny. But, yeah, he just was... You know, in the same locker room, I had Shannon Sharp and Mark Schlereth, and they're both doing national shows. So, and I knew it, and I was like, these guys are just, there's just too much personality. They've got to be, you know, and Shannon's on with, is it Skip, I think?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah, but the funny thing about him is he always, when he argues with you, he calls you by your name. It's like, Wyman, I'm telling you, Wyman, just over and over. You hear him say that, Skip. But, yeah, both of those guys just wildly talented. But Mark Schlereth does a really good job also with, you know, he did two or three Seahawks games with Fox. And, I always root for him because he's very funny, very entertaining, knows the game really well. But this was so clever and so well done.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah, definitely. If you're on Twitter, check it out at Bob Stelton. I retweeted it.
Yeah, go to Bob's Twitter.
Yeah, go to my Twitter. It was sent to me from the Guru Stew, so I give him props for that. But yeah, definitely worth a watch. It's a little over 2 minutes, and it's very good. A reminder, if you don't have the 710 Sports app, you should download it because, A, it's free, and, B, you get everything on that app. You can take us with you on a beautiful day like today. If you're on the move, you won't miss any part of the show. You can listen live, or you can listen to the podcast. You can text in. You can watch the video. Everything is right there at your fingertips. And it's free. All right, coming up, what's been the most unexpected part of the Mariners' start to the season so far? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
A reminder, if you've got a smart speaker in your house, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM and it becomes a radio right there. You don't need to be in your car. You can listen to the radio at home. We got Mariners and Orioles kicking off a four-game series coming up at the top of the hour. We will turn you over to the pregame show. But right now, here's the Mariners' breakthrough moment of the game powered by Fox Plumbing and Heating.
Colome, deep side, delivers. Here's a swing and a fly ball. Into right center field and deep, going back is Buxton looking up, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. It kept going and going and going. Kyle Seager with a three-run home run here in the top of the ninth inning. Second home run of the day. Drives in his second, third, and fourth run of the ball game, and the Mariners now lead it 8-6. Holy smokes, what a comeback for the Mariners this afternoon here in Minnesota.
Kyle Seager, absolutely brilliant yesterday, on base every single time. He was 4-for-4, had a walk, scored two runs, drove in four, is now hitting .314 on the season. And Dave, we, you know, before the break said, you know, what's the most unexpected part of the Mariners season? I think you could put Kyle Seager in that because what's he known for? What's he been known for since he's been here? Yeah, slow starter. He really gets off to a slow start. And I, again, nine games, we'll see how he continues, but that's sort of been the knock on him. It's true for a lot of players. It just takes them a while to get things rolling. And to see him do that yesterday in a game where they desperately needed it. The starting pitching wasn't there, and you needed him to step up. What a huge moment. And, you know, I feel like we're probably watching his final season in a Mariners uniform unless they make a move that nobody expects him to make. And I think he's somebody, you know, once he's gone, the appreciation for him will develop.
Yeah, you mentioned appreciation before, that we don't appreciate him. It's nice that he's off to this fast start. He, other than last year, he was basically the Seattle Seahawks offense, right?
Mariners.
I mean, just but I'm talking about how the offense for the Seahawks always slow starting.
Oh, right.
Get it go later, and that's kind of how Seager was. And then now, just a really hot. By the way, did you think that home run looked like a pop up to me?
Yeah, it didn't. His reaction and just the way it came off the bat, I didn't think that was going anywhere.
I didn't either. There was a lot of wind out there. I don't know if it blew it out, but and you could hear from Rick's his call there. It just didn't look like it. And, you know, maybe the wind blew it out, but, I mean, he has just been so good. And, you know, and I mentioned a couple of games ago, he had the one error where it could have been a double play, but he's more than made up for it with his bat. It's been really good. So as far as surprising – how about the you touched on this, Bob? How about the bullpen?
Yeah,
you know, I was looking at Montero's numbers. I mean, he gave up one home run and two earned runs, but in just 5 1/3 innings pitched, he's got 7 strikeouts. He's only walked 2. I mean, he's been pretty good. And you know, some of the Will Vest, Steckenrider's had some ups and downs, but he does have 7 strikeouts. They love Gravy.
Yeah, don't forget about Gravy.
Yep. 5 strikeouts and 4 innings. So, yeah, I mean, that part of it was a huge question mark. And I feel like it's that way with almost everybody's bullpen, unless you have like this smoking ace. But even if you do, I mean, sometimes the next year he's not the same. So it's always a big question mark. But I think that's been kind of a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, the bullpen by far. And you're right. I mean, despite notoriety or name value, if you will. If you've got a bunch of pitchers in there that you've heard of, and, oh, he was great with the Rangers, and I remember him from the Dodgers or what have you, they are so year-to-year. It is just – it feels like it is such a rarity to have a bullpen that just – it translates from season to season to season. And we saw a perfect example of it here in Seattle a few years ago. Despite the season they were had, they had the best bullpen in baseball. It was either the best or second best. I can't remember what the numbers were, but one of the best bullpens in all of baseball. The following season, they essentially brought back the same cast with just a couple of differences, and they were one of the worst. And it wasn't about injury. It wasn't about anything in particular. It was just you just never know. You just don't know. I mean, the days of Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman and you know, people like that, those are rarities where you've got guys that do it year in, year out for a really long period of time, because it just doesn't happen. Bullpens they fluctuate so much. So even if you know these guys and they've had a history, we saw Edwin Diaz. Diaz was out here.
Yep.
You hated giving him up.
Just gonna mention.
How much did we hate trading him away? I mean, it turned out to be a great trade, but you know, everybody was like, fine, take Cano, but Diaz, man, the guy's electric and nobody can hit him. And he goes out there and they wanted to run him out of town his first season there. He was terrible.
Oh my God. Yeah. And I was like, oh, who's Jared Kelenic? I mean, you're chasing it. I think was Dunn part of that too. Justin Dunn.
Yep.
But, you know, you traded Cano and Edwin Diaz, who was hot as could be. And then I remember tuning into a game with the Mets and on Major League Baseball Network, and he was getting booed. He's getting booed off the mound. So, yeah, and he had a terrible year following up. So, looked like a really good – I don't know, has he done much since? I haven't really paid attention. But it just seems like you're kind of just catching these guys at the right time, right situation, and, you know, it's just unreliable from year to year.
Yep, it's just hard to really count on and go, okay, we're set here. We're good here. You're good when it comes to the bullpen. You just never know. You just don't know, and it feels like the previous year really doesn't amount to much because it does become a year-to-year proposition. One other area, I wouldn't say it's a huge surprise, because the second the guy got here, he was hitting, and then he goes to spring training this year, he's hitting, and Ty France has still carried it over to the regular season now, hitting .324 with a .439 on-base percentage so far. It's just he's been that guy since the moment he got here in that trade with San Diego. He's been spectacular.
Well, and then also part of that trade was Trammell.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And Luis Torrens as well. So that has been such a great move. And, you know, just not just acquiring guys through the draft and building up their farm system, but some of the trades like Edwin Diaz for Jared Kelenic and this one with, what was it, Austin Nola. I'm trying to remember who else they gave up in that trade. I remember at the time thinking, yeah, I really like Nola. It's too bad that he's gone, but boy, it's worked out well.
Oh, well, at the time, he was such a great story, and he was hitting really well and playing really well. He was the guy that just toiled in the minor leagues forever. His brother was famous, but he just, you know, never really had anything going and was an older guy who had been in the minor leagues and gets up here and was making it count. And there was reluctance to give him up. Like, oh, man, he finally is here, and you're going to give him up. And, man, what a great trade that has turned out to be for the Mariners. So lots of good things to look forward to. And they've got game one. Hopefully they keep it going against this Orioles team. Game one coming up. We've got the pregame show happening. It's a four-game series. We'll see what the weather's doing out there. There's a chance we could be back with you later in the afternoon. We'll see what the weather does. But you've got the Orioles. You've got the Mariners. Mariners a winning team right now in third place at 5-4 in the division. Four-game series with the Orioles coming up. You got the pregame show happening. First three games of the series will be happening during our show. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.